Megan, Anna, and I are so excited to have a repeat sponsor who's supporting the Divergent Conversations podcast. Landmark College is the world's first accredited college designed exclusively for students who learn differently. Landmark, located in Putney, Vermont, which is one of my favorite states, offers courses in person and online, awarding associate and bachelor's degrees, and offering pre-college, gap year, and professional development programs for educators who work with neurodivergent students. With a student-to-faculty ratio of just 7-1, and the renowned Landmark College Institute for Research and Training, Landmark offers personalized and research-informed support for neurodivergent students that is not available at traditional colleges. Still enrolling for fall 2025. Learn more about this opportunity at landmark.edu. That's landmark.edu. Hey, everyone. You are listening to the Divergent Conversations podcast. We are two neurodivergent mental health professionals in a neurotypical world. I'm Patrick Cassell.
And I'm Dr. Neff.
And during these episodes, we do talk about sensitive subjects, mental health, and there are some conversations that can certainly feel a bit overwhelming. So we do just want to use that disclosure and disclaimer before jumping in. And thanks for listening. Hey, everyone. Trying to find the words.
Welcome back.
Welcome back to episode 5.
Welcome back to Burnout Hell City, Hellscape City. We're so glad you're here. We're so glad to be here.
Oh my God. I have to laugh at this because
I feel like we should give our listeners some context though. Yeah. They're probably like, what is this? Even more awkward than their typical.
Yeah, we've deteriorated into madness.
Yeah. So we hopped on, I don't know, 5 minutes ago, 6 minutes ago. And I think the first words out of my mouth were like, we are a sorry sack.
So we are talking about our current mental states and physical states, and we're both going through it. And I said to Megan Anna, so what are we talking about today? And she was like, energy, sleep.
Energy management. And we're both like, I don't know. Are we, so we'll talk about spoon theory. Are we like negative spoons? We're in a spoon deficit.
Without a doubt. Yeah.
I'm eating with my hands.
I'm not even able to eat at this moment.
Yeah. I was like, actually, it's like, if I'm able to eat, it's like my face is just hitting the plate.
I have the good visual of that just like face planting into it over and over again, just trying to like somehow get the nutrients. We're struggling, y'all, for different reasons and the same reasons, all intertwined. But it's so fascinating to me. I was saying before we started recording that our last collection was on like not your typical wellness. Here are some tips. Here are some strategies. Like here's stuff that goes against the grain. We are doing a burnout series and we are in it. I just have to laugh at it because like otherwise it's so painful and isolating. It's just
I mean, and that's part of the neurodivergent wellness series we talked about, is like connection, authenticity, playfulness. Like we're laughing, which this is the happiest my mood has been all day. So I think we're doing the things we talked about, but and also yeah, I feel like it's important that we're like honest with folks.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, and also I don't think you and I would be able to record, like that's kind of our thing is authenticity. And we could record, but it would be a terrible episode if we were like, here are our tips and here's how we're managing our energy and we're doing great.
If those words ever come out of my mouth, you know I have been kidnapped and someone is trying to ransom.
Or that it's deep AI fake. Yep. Oh my gosh, I was just listening to an interview with someone or an interview about like the dangers of how AI is going to like kill humanity, which I'm just kind of like sitting on the sidelines of all the AI conversations because I'm like, this is all so interesting and I don't have a strong opinion about if it means the end of humanity or not. But the person doing the interview, like the CEO interview person, I forget his name, in the UK. But someone made an advertisement using his face and name and put it on Facebook. And it was like an advertisement for a scam. But because people trust him, they were clicking on it. And I was like, that is horrifying and terrifying. Like, so Patrick, someone could make an AI advertisement of you saying, check out, you know, using all this positive like language of check out this amazing energy system and you'll feel great. So if people ever see that advertisement, Patrick, know that it's deep fake AI and not actually Patrick.
Or maybe it's like my alter ego creating the cult that everyone says I should have been creating a long time ago. But yeah, it's horrifying, horrifying. Okay.
So we've diverged. Okay. So yeah, you're a bit sick. I'm recovering from like a big sensory week, and what I was saying, which I feel fine saying here, is like I've noticed I've dipped into a depressive state, which I was not totally surprised by, but I also forgot how much I hate depression and how like powerful depressed mind is. So
yeah,
that's why I'm struggling.
Yeah. And I was also saying like when we were messaging that I knew you were struggling just based on our conversation and the drop off. And I was like, I bet that she went into a like depression while she was off, because you kind of alluded to the fact that it was probably coming. Right. And then like sensory overwhelm too. And just everything else in general. Mm-hmm. And I've been sick for like 4 days and it came on rapidly. No COVID, no flu, no strep, sore throat where you're like feeling like you're swallowing glass, feverish, all the things. And this is just so common for me and it makes me so fucking angry. Like I get so frustrated. I get so frustrated with my immune system. I get so frustrated with the fact that I am sick constantly. And I don't like going into that space mentally. I really don't. Mm-hmm. But like,
yeah.
It's middle of June and everyone's like, it's summertime and you're supposed to be outside and it feels great and you have more energy. And I'm like, no, I feel so awful. And I wish it was dark and raining all the time. But I really do.
Yeah.
It's just
no, I totally get that, Patrick. Because yeah, every time I get sick, there's like the discomfort and the just misery and the sensory misery of being sick.
Yeah.
But then there is also that narrative of like, and I'm like, I'm always sick. This is my life. Like I can really easily, especially if I'm also depressed, dip into a catastrophic narrative around being sick and around the immune system and the energy limits. That will tap into our episode. So today, like same thing with sensory, like that was a lot of it last week for me, was confronting my sensory limits, not being able to like be with my kids in the way I wanted to, or to interact with my my sister-in-laws. So whether it's energy limits from sensory stuff or sickness, like, yeah, there's so much that comes up for that. Whenever I'm bumping into an energy limitation, I can't say the word, but I feel claustrophobic. And that's when I get into like a pretty negative spiral.
Yeah.
And I think my depressive episode is more than that, but that I think was kind of part of the triggering narrative that got me pretty into despair, which was fun. Sarcasm.
I really feel for you on that. And I can like hear the heaviness and the painfulness that comes with that statement of understanding and confronting limitations. And for everyone listening, that was a Megan Anna-ism, claustrophobic, AKA claustrophobic, for those of you who may post, where's this word?
How do you say, oh my gosh, do you know what my team told me this week? So I think I can probably talk about it now because I think it'll be announced soon. The book I'm working on this year is on the autistic ADHD experience. Mm-hmm. And it's called, the title might change, but it's got ADHD in the title. And my team was like, they're like, I hope you're not embarrassed, but I just want you to know every time you say it on the podcast, you say ADHD. Mm-hmm. And like, And they were like phonetically trying to walk me through how to say it. And I just, I like, so odd HD. I still can't do it. So, but I figure I have 2 years before this book comes out to learn how to say Audi HD.
You just did it right there. Boom. You know, you've said this before on the podcast, and it was one of those moments similarly to like back in the day when you did say claustrophobic, where I literally thought to myself, oh, I've been saying the word wrong this entire time. And then I just never thought much more of it. I was just like, damn, do I need to like go back and look at the phonetics of what I'm saying? But thank you for verifying that for me.
That was the first thing. I was like, I wonder if I've been misleading Patrick. I wonder if he's been saying it. Because I am just like Audi ADHD or whatever.
You say
I
say it with such confidence too. So, and I was like, who am I question making on this?
Maybe I contribute some good to the world, but I've also contributed a lot of bad phonetics to the world.
More good than bad. So we'll take the good with the bad. Okay, you can tell how much Divergent is happening already, where our brains are at. I think like struggling again. So trying to think of how to frame this, but yeah, we want to talk about energy pacing systems, spoon theory.
I can do like my little info dump. So pacing systems, I first learned about them when I was working again in hospital setting with people with chronic health conditions. So pacing systems, it's not like unique to neurodivergent people at all. It's been a part of kind of health management for a long time. And it's this idea of pacing out our energy, because otherwise what tends to happen is we fall into the boom or bust cycle. And I think neurodivergent people tend to do that in general. And I think some acceptance of the boom or bust cycle is actually pretty important for neurodivergent people. But I'm describing it from the context of either chronic pain or chronic health, the way the boom or bust cycle is conceptualized, is basically when you have good energy or when you have a low pain day. And I know both you and I live with chronic pain, so we can relate to this as well from a pain perspective. Yep. When we have a low pain day or good energy day, partly what we were just saying about like when we're not sick, when we're not sensory overwhelmed, when we're not confronting our limits, it feels so good. So then it's like, let me cram everything into this day. Like probably when you recover from your sickness, you're going to be like, oh my gosh, I have my energy back. And then you're going to try and do so much. Yep. So then we tend to overexert ourselves, especially if energy or like less pain is an uncommon experience for us. But we override then our like our bandwidth or our capacity. And so then we fall into a bust and then we slowly rebuild and we tend to then have another boom. And I'm doing this with my hands, but there's a chart I like to draw out for people. It's like the first boom and then the first bust. It's like the boom is really high. And then the second cycle, the boom. So like, let's say it goes up to a 9 on a 1 to 10 scale. The next like boom day goes up to like an 8 because you don't have as much energy. And then you bust a bit deeper. And then the next time you come up, it's up to like a 6. So over time, the boom days, like the high capacity days, get diminished or lower, but the busts get deeper and longer to recover from. And so that's a really common cycle for anyone who's struggling with chronic pain or chronic fatigue, is that boom or bust cycle. So we want help getting out of that. And that's where pacing systems is. It gives us some sort of framework to think about, okay, what kind of energy expenditure do I actually have? And then where am I building in breaks before I'm hitting that bust point? So that what we're trying to do is basically build a slightly more even line versus this really spiky line of the boom or bust. And so there's different frameworks out there. We can talk about some of them, but that's the concept behind it. So for example, with like chronic pain, maybe you're vacuuming and your pain gets to like a yellow, you'd actually stop there to do something restorative instead of pushing through till the pain's at a red. And then similar with energy. So does that framework, first of all, just I'm curious what you think about that framework or if that cycle sounds familiar to you.
Well, yes. And I think for a lot of us who are all or nothing thinkers and sometimes all or nothing people in terms of personality style, like when you're describing, let's stop vacuuming at yellow to avoid red, right? And not push through the limit. I think immediately to so many of us who probably are like, but I need to get it done. Like, I need to get this done because I don't know when I'm going to be able to do it again, or when I'm going to have the energy or the desire or whatever.
Or remember, thank you, ADHD. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
That is mm-hmm. what I struggle with, is like, when I'm in it, I've got to be in it. And like, I cannot pull myself out, or I have a hard time pulling myself out because of all of those reasons. And I would love to have less of that hand motions, if you're not watching on YouTube, spiky profile, because having some plateau or leveling it out, you know, and just allowing you to conserve just even 1% of that energy, opposed to going into the negative or that reserve that you don't really have built up.
Yeah. 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 Absolutely. Sorry, I spaced out at the end, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, shit, what's the last thing I remember Patrick saying? I think it was the hand motion.
Yep. So, yeah, I think those pacing systems and trying to learn how to track your limitations and to remove yourself when you're noticing those highs and those lows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And I think there's a few things pacing systems do for neurodivergent folks. Like one, I think anything that gives us language to describe like our energy limits or our sensory yeah. limits is helpful for self-advocacy. Like if we can communicate to someone, I don't have the spoons for that, or I don't have the energy. There's a few different, like energy accounting is another pacing system that was an autistic person came up with that. So it's like, or actually my favorite, this came up in my community because people are like, what the hell is up with spoons? Which I'll explain the backstory, because I feel like spoon theory makes so much more sense when you know the backstory. But people can be like, this is so weird. Why would I tell people how many spoons I have? And so an alternative is fuck bucks, which I find people who hate spoon theory, I find tend to like fuck bucks. Like, sorry, I'm all out of fuck bucks for today.
Wow. I've never heard that before. I need to use that immediately.
I can't ever see you using spoon theory, but I can see you using a fuck bucks theory.
Yep. Okay. I like that. Yeah. Can you tell everyone the background behind spoon theory? Because what I think a lot of people hear from people is like, I'm out of spoons, right? And either the person receiving that is like, what the hell does that mean? Or
do you need me to go get you more spoons? Like, what is going on?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or like, people sometimes will refer to things like as spoonies, or like,
yeah.
Yeah. And again, another situation where someone is probably like, what the fuck does that mean?
What is a spoonie? Yeah. Okay. So because phonetics, I'm going to mispronounce the last name, I'm sure, but Christine Misurandino. So she's a lupus patient. So this comes from like disability and chronic illness advocacy space. So it was when she was in college, she was at a diner with a friend, and the friend was asking, what is it like to experience lupus? And Christine she kept doing maybe some medical definitions. And finally she was understanding the friend was trying to ask like, what is the experience of it? So again, they're at a diner, and I like that Christine is a visual processor. So she grabs all the spoons on the table and grabs the spoons from the other table and then lays them out and is like, okay, it's like when you wake up and let's say you have 12 spoons for the day. Okay, you take a shower, that's a spoon, and you take a spoon away. Okay, you get dressed, that's a spoon, and you take a spoon away. And she was using this metaphor to describe kind of when you wake up with a limited capacity of spoons and then things take it versus maybe a more replenishable supply of spoons. Right. And so this became the working metaphor. And it's just because it's what was around in the diner. Sure. And it was a unit of energy that made the metaphor she was trying to describe visual. And then this sort of took off in the disability space. And so people who call themselves spoonies, it's kind of a like affirming, warm way of connecting with like someone who has some sort of chronic illness or some sort of limitation on their energy.
Right.
And so that's the kind of enduring term that came off. So I feel like understanding that backstory, if there's actually like a visual context and story for why people say spoon theory, because yeah, otherwise it's like, why are we talking about spoons here?
And, you know, for those of you listening, you know, there are so many analogies that can make sense there, right? Like you can be talking some, I've heard people that I've come in close proximity with talking about how it's like your life force on a video game or, you know, any, your cell phone battery, whatever. But in reality, the thing that gets missed a lot when we're talking about, okay, if I have 12 spoons for the day and each task takes a spoon and it's really hard to like regenerate them or replenish them, the unexpected stuff that happens to you throughout the day that takes a spoon away. Like, say you have your morning planned out and you take your shower and that spoon is gone. You get dressed, you eat breakfast, that spoon is gone. You're getting prepared to start working. All of a sudden, you have an emergency situation that you have to deal with. That might take 3 to 4 spoons away. Like, that might not be a situation where, and then all of a sudden, you're working with, you know, 2 or 3 left for the day, and you just don't, mm-hmm. your capacity continues to diminish.
Well, and that's going to take extra spoons for autistic people. And I'm hearing more and more people talk about this whole idea of the predictive model of thinking and how autistic people, I feel like this is a really simplified view of it, but like we're a little bit more tied to our predictive maps. And I think the thinking is we prioritize like the sensory information in the here and now. And so our predictive maps are not like as accurate as other people's. And so that's partly why we get so attached to our routines and to the predictive maps we have. Cause like in the moment predictions are not as flexible or accurate for us. So just the unexpected thing happening that doesn't align with our prediction of the day, that in itself also is taking energy away. Right. So there's the unexpected energy, and then that actually depletes people like us a bit more. There's also, I keep saying I want to make a workbook on fork theory to go with the spoon theory. So there's also this idea of like fork, which is, have you heard the term like stick a fork in me, I'm done? Mm-hmm. So fork theory kind of pairs really well with spoon theory. Fork theory would be more like the aggravators, like the things. So like an unexpected sensory irritant or maybe an unexpected routine change.
Sure.
And so that's where it's like, I'm hitting these irritants that are making me done. So like we could put spoon theory and fork theory together. Now, then we need to make a knife theory so that we've got like a whole culinary experience going on. I'm not sure what knife theory would be. Maybe we can create it together. But those
I love
pair
that.
Well.
But let's add the asterisk if any of your team is listening to this episode. Do not let Meg and Anna start any new workbooks. We talked about this at the beginning of the series. I want that to just be on the record.
It would be so easy though. It'd be like a 40 page, like sure. So easy.
So here's what happens, right? It would be so easy. And then that happens and you go into monotropic manner and you're creating this workbook and then these other things start to get dropped around you. And then you come out of monotropic focus and you're like, oh shit, I was supposed to be prepping for this speech that I'm giving or this training that I'm doing or this other thing that I've got going on. Now I need to play catch up.
I have this fantasy of just canceling all upcoming talks for the next year and just working on this book. That yes. Not the fork one, the Audi ADHD. The Audi ADHD, which I cannot pronounce the title of the book that I'm working on.
I have that fantasy every day. I mean, we've talked about this fantasy of like, can we just go somewhere for a very extended period of time and work on these books together and we don't even have to speak to each other. We can just be in proximity. I fantasize about this more and more. I actually had Jennifer, I'm hosting a summit in Scotland in like 3 weeks for about 120 people, which it doesn't matter how I feel about it at the moment. But she texted me today and was like, do you want to not come? She was like,
whoa,
I know you're not doing well. And I think, you know, if it's not worth the energy expenditure. And I was like, she's like, nobody expects you to come. I was like, well, that's certainly not true. But in reality, I just appreciated that that like connection of like acknowledgement of, hey, you've kind of made it known how much you're struggling. I see that. And I just want to offer this as like a way to get out of this situation. But
that's so, she's so kind to you. I really appreciate Jen.
Probably listening right now and smiling. Yeah, it's just one of those things where, like, is we've talked about this before, about how mapping your energy, right? And like, is the juice worth the squeeze, so to speak? Like, is this event or whatever we commit to and the energy that's going to go into it, is the depletion that comes with the experience mm-hmm. and the sensory overwhelm and whatever else happens along the way, is that worth it? And it's so hard to go through every day thinking about that on a consistent basis, but also like future planning in that way too.
Well, and that's, I think, where ADHD like ties into the mix mm-hmm. in a way that's complex is sure. there's right. There's like now time. There's like now time and not now time. So for example, I'm starting to get a few requests for the fall for speaking things that sound and that involve travel. And I'm like, well, that sounds fun and shiny. And yeah, my fall self is going to have energy for that. And so I'm saying yes to these things. And that's partly like that. I think my ADHD brain. Well, and maybe this is just like a human thing. I'm projecting yeah. onto my future self that my future self is not going to be depressed, is going to have energy. And yet all of the evidence points to the fall being like typically a really horrific time for me energetically and mental health wise. So yeah. So the ADHD bit, I think, makes it hard to plan future, like to set our future self up well. Yeah.
For sure. Yeah, exactly. So I made a post about this, like, ADHD struggle the other day about like dropping into monotropic focus, then the next day struggling significantly with like executive functioning and dropping mm-hmm. all the plates that are spinning, so to speak.
So I try. So this is a way that I am, and I'm trying to get better at this, because what I tend to do, like right now, I'm working on these four trainings for a PESI, like big training that I'm contributing to. So my tendency is like every day I'm working on these trainings and talks. But what I'm trying to do, and I'm telling myself once I get through this batch of intense work, this is what I'm going to start doing, is giving myself 2 days of monotropic focus. So one will be on writing this book, like 1 day a week. Another day a week will be on presentation prep. And then the days between are my ping pong days, where I'm cleaning up the mess of having spent a whole day in monotropic manner.
Right.
And so what I'm trying to do, and I'll report back if I'm successful in this, is to alternate monotropic days with cleanup days, so that, because like right now what's happening is I spent all last week deep focused on the presentation and I'm so overwhelmed with the ping pong that I'm struggling. Like yesterday was supposed to be my ping pong day, but I was really struggling to do task initiation because those are not activities that are easy for me. Oh my gosh, my voice.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I've been trying to figure that balancing act out too. And it's really hard. I was like writing for this book. Got like 80 pages done last week. I'm like, okay, cool. Like that gives me a little bit of a head start before I start traveling. The next 2 days were just what you're calling ping pong days. And everything just feels so overwhelming in that space where, like, I feel like messages feel more like demanding and irritating, and task initiation is harder. And I just feel just so frustrated. And then I have to do all this dumb administrative shit that I don't care about.
Okay. I am going to like try and tap this back into pacing. Because I actually think what you're saying, this does connect to thinking about energy rhythms for neurodivergent folks and then like trying to build lives that work a bit more for us. So like a few things. One activity I like trying to do is like mapping energy rhythms. And that could be daily. So for example, I know my mornings, I'm a really slow wake up. Like I've got pretty good brain fog in the morning, but I tend to have more energy at night. Early afternoon is my best creative energy. Then I've also got seasonal energy. Like I tend to have more energy in the spring. typically the summer, unless I get sick, and then the fall and winter, just like, no. And then pairing activities, or, and then if you've got a menstruation cycle, there's also like, often there's energy shifts and ebbs with that. And then actually pairing activities that align with the energy versus, because I know, like, if I'm trying to write or do something cognitively overwhelming and it's misaligned with my energy, that task is going to take so much longer. So it's better for me just to do a different kind of task.
Sure.
And so that is one of the, that's a different way of using a pacing system. Like, if the idea of, you know, this idea of talking concretely about energy units doesn't work, I think another way to work with energy is really getting to know your energy rhythms and then aligning as best you can, aligning work with your energy rhythms.
Yeah, I like all of that. And just gonna always come away from our conversations just like, huh, what should I introduce? What should I try out? And just noticing it more. You know, I think that's a big piece too, is just the acknowledgement and the awareness of some of these ebbs and flows. And some days you're gonna wake up with just not a lot in the tank, you know? And
yeah,
allowing that to be okay when you can.
I think that was the biggest shift for me, was I used to do a lot of kind of force-based methods. So like, especially when I was doing assessment reports, it was like, well, I said I was going to do an assessment report today, and so I want to do it. And once I realized it took me like three times as long and took me so much more energy to do that when I was forcing it, and there just was that friction of working against my energy versus like, okay, I don't have energy for that, but I could have energy for this.
Right.
So giving myself space to pivot and permission to not force, that's probably been the biggest shift I've made around energy management. That's been really helpful. Is, and also because a lot of us do have interoception struggles, actually paying attention to my energy, like, yeah, okay, I have some body energy, but not cognitive energy, or, okay, I've got some cognitive energy, but I'm slow body energy. So like just being able to even name what kind of energy I have or don't have.
Yeah, I like that for sure. Anything else that comes to mind with just energy in general in the context of everything we're talking about as we're starting to move towards wrap up?
I mean, I think the pieces around, it helps with self-advocacy to have like shared language with people that you're close to.
Yeah.
And I would say the piece about interoception awareness, that is partly why it can be helpful to kind of step back and think through what are the energy depleters and to actually kind of pace around it. Because for some of us, for many of us, we can't necessarily rely on those signals from our body.
Right.
So, and it also, there might be external signals that were like over capacity. I think a good pacing system helps us access more permission and self-compassion around like, but we have, there's often grief work in that, right? Of like, it sucks to wake up with 12 spoons or 15 spoons or however many sure. energy units or fuck bucks you wake up with. And we have to like, there is a reckoning with that.
Yeah.
I think before we can get to that place of giving ourselves permission or self-compassion to be able to acknowledge like, I don't have capacity for that. I really wish I did, and I don't. So it's also, it's not just about like mechanically implementing a pacing system. It's about, the grief that comes with it, but also the self-compassion and the give, like permission for our needs to matter, permission for like our capacity to be what it is without overriding it. And then working through all of the, there's going to be internalized ableism that comes with that of like, I should be able to push through. I see other people push through. So I think the invitation in this is really how this might give people a portal or an access point to some of the deeper work that many of us need to do when we're working to build a more sustainable life.
It's really well said. Yeah.
And you and I still suck at this. Like, we talk about this all the time on the podcast. So it's also like, it's one thing to know this stuff in our heads. And it's like, It is hard. It is complex to actually implement this, to actually honor it.
It is. I was going to wrap us up, but I'll mention that, you know, 2 weeks ago, I did kind of like publicly make that statement on my social media that I was going into a low capacity season. My ability to respond to things, to commit to things, to say yes to things is greatly diminished, and that I was going to step away quite a bit. And stuff like that has been really empowering for me to just like acknowledge it and name it. And I've had to do a lot of what we're talking about, of like examining it, unpacking it, deconstructing it, working through grief and internalized ableism too, of saying like, I should be able to push through and say yes to all the things. And it's like, no, you shouldn't. Mm-hmm. And you can't. Like, mm-hmm. That's the reality, is like, you can't.
Mm-hmm.
And, having acceptance around that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 It's hard.
It is. It is. And even in this space that I'm in, sick, like just existing, still hard, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to honor what you need and to just support it and accommodate it. So I want to just encourage you all out there who are listening. Like, it is hard. Like, it's...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, and I don't know. Maybe I'm like... Yeah, I think I am. I just had a thought of like, why do people listen to us? Like, I feel like
it's a lot.
You know, like, I feel like, well, not always, but I feel like we're just kind of sad.
I mean,
but we're honest.
Sad,
no, so
hashtag.
Sad but honest. That's our tagline. No, I was gonna say, maybe in an effort to like bring a little bit of positivity, as much as it is important to know about like the things that are an energy drain for us and pacing it, also we have things that restore our energy, give us energy, like connection, like play, yep. like humor, like restorative rest. So as important as it is to understand the things that deplete us, it's equally important to consider the things that give us energy and to
sure.
find ways to prioritize that as well. So yeah, I just wanted to mention, energy management isn't just about the negative stuff. It's also about leaning into the things that do spark life and energy in us.
Yes, absolutely. Like a couple of days ago, I went to a farm with some friends and rolled around and socialized a bunch of capybara babies. So that was really enjoyable and gave me some life for about 2 hours. So getting some of that, you know, energy replenished in the ways that feel restorative and connecting to, super important.
Mm-hmm. And if listening to us gives you energy, I don't understand why, but cool. Keep doing it.
That's yeah.
And like, download, and subscribe on Fridays.
See you next week.
Hey, it's Dr. Neff here. This season, we are clearly talking about autistic burnout, a topic that NeuroDivergent Insights has covered extensively. So if you would like more resources to supplement your learning, we've put together a page where we've curated all of our autistic burnout resources, freed and paid resources. We have lots of articles on autistic burnout. We have an upcoming free email course that's going to be released soon. We have workbooks on autistic burnout. So if you'd like to check out our resources, again, both free and paid, you can go to neurodivergentinsights.com/burnout-resources. It's linked below and in the show notes. I hope you don't need these resources, but if you do, they are there for you.